Another night of terror in Kyiv.
And Ukrainian air defense managed to destroy 18 drones out of 23 over the city of Kyiv.
Plus, Russian President Vladimir Putin is meeting with the Belarusian president. What's on the agenda?
We would not be able to distinguish would it be Belarusian or Russian forces. They are having joint training exercises since the war began.
And later in the program, we celebrate Hanukkah with refugees in Hungary. Today is Monday, December 19th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Kyiv was the target of major Russian drone attacks Sunday night and early Monday morning. The AP's Charles de la Desma has the details.
Authorities in Ukraine's capital Kyiv say it's being targeted in a new attack and a key facility has been hit. City officials say more than 20 Iranian-made drones were detected over the capital's airspace and at least 15 were shot down. The region's governor, Alexei Kuleba, posted on Telegram some infrastructure facilities were damaged as well as private houses and at least two people were injured. Kyiv Mayor Vitaly Klitschko has added explosions were heard in two districts, but there were no immediate casualties reported and emergency services are working in the area. For some time, Russia's been targeting energy infrastructure, including in Kyiv, as part of a strategy to try to freeze Ukrainians. I'm Charles de la Desma.
Another busy, news-filled day for Charles de la Desma as Russian President Vladimir Putin was in Minsk, the capital of Belarus, today to meet with one of his staunchest allies, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko. Charles de la Desma is back with more details.
Analysts say the Kremlin might look again for Belarusian military support for its Ukraine operations. But according to the Washington-based Institute for the Study of War, the winter weather and Russia's depleted resources mean any attack probably won't come soon. The Institute assesses the capacity of the Russian military to prepare and conduct effective large-scale mechanized offensive operations in the next few months remains questionable, adding it's unlikely Lukashenko will commit the Belarusian military, which would also have to be re-equipped, to the invasion of Ukraine. I'm Charles de la Desma.
As this show is being written and recorded, Vladimir Putin is in Belarus to meet with his ally, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko. For more context, I spoke with VOA's Miroslava Gungadze. I'm joined on the line by Miroslava Gungadze. She's VOA's Eastern European Bureau Chief. She's stationed out of Warsaw, Poland. Miroslava, right now in Minsk, President Putin and President Lukashenko are meeting. And you recently came back from the border with Ukraine and Belarus. Can you tell us what you saw and what you think might be happening right now in Minsk?
Actually, I was there deliberately because 2 weeks ago, Moscow and Minsk signed a very secretive agreement between military forces. And the fear of a possible invasion from Belarus become very real at that point. And I wanted to understand how ready Ukrainian forces on the border to defend Ukraine. And we went to the ground zero at the border. Basically, we saw Belarusian border guards very close to us. And what I can tell you, Ukraine and Belarus are sharing 1,000 kilometers of the border, and only 4 roads connecting the two countries at the point. And all those roads in the last 9 months were prepared for possible invasion. That means that they can be destroyed any time. We need to understand the environment there, that the roads is one thing, but the whole territory between Belarus and Ukraine is covered with mud and deep mud. So there is no way any ground forces can cross the border line without using the roads.
Miroslava, you mentioned a invasion coming from Belarus. Are you referring to Belarusian soldiers invading Ukraine or Russian soldiers going through Belarus on their way?
Actually, this is a very good question because now we would not be able to distinguish would it be Belarusian or Russian forces. They are having joint training exercises since the war began. The Belarus Russians are using Belarus as a launching point for rockets, as a logistical hub for the war efforts, as well as other needs that they for the war efforts. And Belarusian opposition claim that Belarus basically occupied by Russian forces at the point. So if we will see any offensive operation on the ground there, it would be definitely mixed. And maybe it will be Belarusian forces dressed in Russian uniform or vice versa.
Miroslava Gongadze is VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief. We reached her in Warsaw. A few days ago, on December 16th, the VOA Russian Service's White House correspondent Mykhailo Komedovsky spoke with John Kirby. He's the National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications, and they spoke about the latest on U.S. support for Ukraine.
So recently we've heard multiple reports of explosions and presumable drone attacks in the Russian Federation. And in one of your interviews, you said the following, let me quote you: "We're not encouraging or enabling Ukrainian operations inside Russia. We're trying to make sure that they can defend their territory and win back their ground in Ukraine," end of quote. From your point of view, is it possible to win the war without targeting military infrastructure within Russia, the infrastructure that is actively used to attack Ukrainian civilians?
Well, I think we'd let the Ukrainians and President Zelensky as commander-in-chief in particular, define what his intentions are, what his specific objectives are. That's not something that we're dictating to him or in any way putting upon him. What we're focused on is making sure that they can defend their territory, they can win back lost ground that the Russians have illegally taken from them. And that's why so much of the capabilities we've been providing them are designed to do exactly that. The war has evolved over time. You know, the first few weeks, it was all about Kyiv, the Battle of Kyiv, which the Ukrainians won. And back then, we were talking about anti-tank missiles. Then it moved into artillery as the fighting really concentrated on the Donbas, which is a lot like Kansas, very open farmland. And now, given these, well, I think the only word to say is unprecedented air assaults by Russia, both from cruise missiles and from Iranian drones, the likes of which we've just seen again over the last 12 to 18 hours, air defense capabilities are becoming a chief requirement of the Ukrainian armed forces. And so we're focused on, as I said in that quote, making sure that they can succeed on the battlefield in Ukraine, that they can defend their territory. But as I also said, we're not encouraging or enabling operations outside Ukraine. That's never been part of the policies that we've been pursuing. As for what happens outside Ukraine, I would let the Ukrainian armed forces speak to that.
So can Ukrainians use the military equipment provided by the United States to target those military units, for instance, in Russia?
We are not encouraging or enabling Ukrainian armed forces to strike outside of Ukraine.
But there is no pact between Kyiv and Washington.
We have certainly made clear our concerns.
So Russia warned Thursday that if the U.S. delivers some sophisticated air defense missiles like the Patriots, it's going to be a red line for them, the red line crossed for them, and it's going to prompt a reaction from the Kremlin. And is this the reason why you're not announcing the the delivery of the Patriots to Ukraine as planned? Because we've heard from President Biden, we heard him like literally an hour ago, and he said way off the mic the following, you'll hear in a few minutes, still no statement. So
We've provided more than 25 presidential drawdown packages to Ukraine, not to mention other Security Assistance Initiative funds for contracts for security assistance for Ukraine over the last 9 months. And there will be more. There will be another announcement of a security assistance package for Ukraine in I'm sure, in coming days. I'm not going to get ahead of that. I'm certainly not going to get ahead of the president. And I'm not going to confirm press reporting about what's in that security assistance package. We've never done that. When we have a package to announce, we'll speak to that. We'll speak to the contents. We'll speak to the amount of money that's being spent on it. And we'll talk about the timing in terms of getting it into the hands of Ukrainian soldiers as fast as possible.
Are you concerned about the warnings coming from Moscow, warnings to Washington? Because they've been pretty clear. If you provide Ukraine with that type of munition, we're going to respond. But they're not specifying the way.
Well, again, I'm not going to get ahead of a package that hasn't been announced or talked about. I've seen the press reporting. I'm just not going to go beyond that. Russia's not going to dictate to the United States or to any other country what security assistance we provide Ukraine. We're doing that in lockstep with the Ukrainians, talking to them almost every day about what their needs are and making sure that we are best meeting those needs. And if we can't, then the United States has proven able and willing, to talk to allies and partners about how they might meet those capabilities.
VOA Russian Services White House correspondent Mykhailo Komodovsky speaking with John Kirby. You're listening to Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. As we've heard, there were drone attacks in Kyiv last night. There were attacks on the city last week, too. It's time now to turn to our Kyiv reporter, Anna Chernikova. The media here seems to be making a bigger deal out of the shelling last night than last week. Were there more drones involved? Was there more damage overall? Do you know?
I would not say that this attack that happened today overnight was less damaging or more damaging than the one on Friday. I think that they're equally damaging for Ukrainian energy system and equally, you know, nervous for Ukrainian society. What I can say that the attack that happened on Friday, Russian forces mostly used missiles in addition to drones. Tonight, Russian forces used drones, and most of those drones were actually targeting the city of Kyiv. So for the moment, we know that there were in total 35 drones used, and 30 of those 35 were destroyed by the Ukrainian air defense. And just 23 of those 35 were registered over the city of Kyiv alone. And Ukrainian air defense managed to destroy 18 drones out of 23 over the city of Kyiv. And for the moment, we know that energy infrastructure was targeted and energy infrastructure was hit in different districts. This caused even more difficult situation in the energy system. And what we know for the moment that three districts in the city of Kyiv are completely, without electricity still or with very limited electricity supplies.
Here in Washington, here in the United States, we're very insulated from this conflict. We read about it, we listen to it on the radio, we see it on television, but we haven't experienced it the way you guys have. How does a drone attack sound different, feel different from a missile attack? Because to us, it just seems like they're causing explosions. But can you feel a difference on the ground?
Yes, there are very precise differences. So basically, when air raid siren starts, if we talk about missile, a missile attack could happen within the first 20 minutes from the beginning of air raid siren. If we talk about, because missiles are faster and missiles are they're faster, and they cause, when they hit the target, they cause not only loud sound but also shaking. So when missile hit a certain target, buildings would be shaking in a radius of around 3 kilometers, and this is exactly what happened to my building on Friday when missile hit one of the energy infrastructure facilities, and it was like a bit more than 3 kilometers away from my place. When drone hit, it is a really loud sound. However, there is no, no that shaking. So I think that it is less powerful, the explosion itself. However, it is as damaging. And the drone would not leave, the drone would leave, less hole if it hits the ground, for instance. But usually drones actually are hitting the destination more precisely. And this is what also energy and energy sector experts and energy sector representatives told us when we were talking to them last week, that actually drones are very precise in their in reaching their target. So, and also when missile is going, you don't really hear it. You can see it from the window, for example, that I did once, and you don't really hear it. You might hear some sound, like whispering or something like this. When drone is in the air, you hear it quite loudly, and actually this is a sound of this old motorbike or old car, which is the old engine sound. So I guess this is the main difference.
And I haven't got much time left. Can you give us a quick update on the frontline situation in areas outside Kyiv?
East part of the country, eastern front line, remains the hottest spot for the moment. And President Zelensky, in one of his latest speeches, again highlighted that the city of Bakhmut and surrounding area remains the main hot spot, and extremely heavy battles happening there. Extremely difficult situation for both sides is there. And for the moment, what we know that Ukrainians managed to keep certain points very strongly, and we don't really hear about any, significant changes in terms of the front line itself. But we hear from the general staff that Ukrainians, continue to keep their positions there. So Russian forces do not advance. At least this is what we have from the official sources. And also, we do not hear any advance news from Russian side. So basically, battles are happening there. The territory of Ukraine is under very constant shelling all the time, and especially we talk about the Zaporizhia region and Kherson region. The city of Kherson is shelled by Russian forces every hour, I should say. So every time I check information about the shelling, I see that the city of Kherson experienced explosions again and again and again.
Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
Before the invasion, Ukraine had one of Europe's largest Jewish populations. Saul Melamed is a Ukrainian Jew, currently a refugee in Hungary, and Sunday night was the first night of Hanukkah, traditionally one of the happiest nights on the Jewish calendar. This year, however, things are different for him. Different, but still very meaningful.
I think materially it's different, right? Because we have in our home, we have very beautiful Hanukkah of the silver, but from the other side, here we have such a community, such a warm atmosphere of Hanukkah.
Saul is staying at the Machni Chabad, a rescue village for Ukrainian Jews in Hungary. It's the largest Jewish rescue camp in Europe and open to any Jews fleeing the war in Ukraine. About 2,000 people have passed through the camp, some stopping over before going to Israel, Western Europe, or the United States, and other families are settling in for the long term until they can go home. Again, Saul Melamed.
I'm still hoping to come back to Ukraine. I can't be as optimistic to say that it will end till the next summer. It seems to be a long time story. But my plans are to return.
Thriving Jewish religious life in Ukraine has been shattered by the war. More than half its communities have been evacuated, finding refuge around Europe and in Israel. The war in Ukraine has created millions of child refugees, and many of Ukraine's 100,000-plus children in the nation's system of orphanages have also been displaced. Using technology, a group of U.S. scientists is trying to help, as Ksenia Turkova reports.
This is an online science class for children from orphanages and refugee camps who have been displaced by Russia's war on Ukraine. Many orphanages in Ukraine have been forced to close or relocate due to the war, disrupting the lives of children with only staff to watch over them. So a group of U.S. scientists united to help through a project called Earthlings Hub. Volunteers offer the children online science classes to help provide some structure and routine while capturing their interest and imagination. Astrophysicist and former astronaut instructor Julia Brodsky started the project.
When the war started, everyone was shocked for the first few weeks. But then we thought about what children and parents were going through, how important it was for them to feel some kind of normalcy.
Brodsky and her colleagues put the word out that they needed teachers who could fascinate orphaned children with science lessons and in the process give orphanage staff a much-needed break. Teacher Alexander Kaurov stepped up to help.
I was teaching a course where we pretended to travel in time and tried to make scientific discoveries using some materials at hand. It's hardly a traditional school course, but you can pack many interesting things in there.
Together with four of her colleagues and 106 children under their care, orphanage teacher Irina Shramko fled from Ukraine to Poland. Shramko says the online classes have been a huge help.
We are with kids all the time. We're responsible for their lives and well-being, even when they're having online classes with US teachers. But we can take a breath, sit in silence, get a little distracted. It's such a relief.
Project workers say teachers from other countries are also lining up to join the Earthlings Hub team, including from the UK, Germany, and Australia. Teachers benefit too, according to Halina Furdyga, a principal in the Ukrainian city of Chernivtsi.
It's a different approach to teaching math than we had in our school.
It's interesting for everyone, including our teachers. They take part in classes and I'm sure will borrow ideas.
Officials say so far the biggest issue is the lack of computers. Donors have provided 300 laptops to children in Poland, but with so many displaced children, they say many more are needed. Ksenia Turkova for VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.